Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome, come one, come all, to Confidently Insecure, the podcast where we're absolutely sure we don't know everything. I am your host, Kelsey Darrah. And look, we have a new little setup. Oh my gosh, what is this? One camera? Who is this lovely person sitting next to me? Don't be alarmed. I'm introducing her to you right now. She's my good friend who I adore. She is a journalist of the celebs. She knows all their salacious secrets. She has written for Get This, Vanity Motherfucking Fair, New York Times, LA Times, L and Allure, and she is the host of her very own podcast, Uncover Girl, which dissects the most iconic celebrity profiles and hosts salons at the W in Hollywood Hotel. So Hollywood, so bougie, so chic. She is also from New Zealand, which is not, in fact, Australia.
It is not.
My dearest friend, my hottest, most talentedest friend, Beatrice Hazelhurst.
Mama, what a fab introduction. Oh my God, I see how you do this for a living.
You're very easy to hype. You're very hypeable.
I am hyped and horny for this.
Good.
Let me tell you.
I'm wet. I'm slipping off my velvet couch. I was saying you are like one of a very few, I can count on my hand probably, of friends that I made as an adult.
It's crazy. I remember the day like it was yesterday.
Take us back, Beatrice.
We were seated at a dinner
uh-huh.
for a mentalist, no less.
Like a magician who reads your mind.
Yeah,
event.
Telepathy.
For like a brand. And I went by myself. I remember being like, why am I going to this by myself?
So brave of you.
Thank you.
When all of those are just for networking.
Yes.
I mean, it's and you're really thrown to the wolves out there.
And I kind of remember seeing you and your boyfriend you're with,
yes.
Chrissy, shout out Chrissy. And I remember being like, they look friendly.
Oh, that's kind.
Yeah. So I sat down next to you and it was boom, sparks are flying. Kismet.
But you know what? It was the environment.
Yes.
It was the environment to make friendships because it was just so surreal.
Yes.
I mean, this guy was walking around the room. He was pulling people out and saying, you know, think of your childhood best friend and I will guess their name.
Yeah.
You were conjuring a name in your mind.
Yes.
And he was going, Carolina?
Is and you're Carolina? Like, I haven't thought about Carolina in 25 years. How the fuck would you know
that? How would you know that?
And that was the thing, right? It's like, he was doing things that he couldn't have researched. Like, there was no Instagramming or like, I don't even think he knew who was going to be there, to
be
honest.
There was 30 people in that room.
Yeah.
Even if he had known, the cuts were too deep. Like, he couldn't have gone back far enough
in time. You know
what?
Maybe that's why we had such sparks of friendship when we very first met. Because we were going through, like, a collective, like, miracle.
No, it was like, trauma. It was, like, seeing
trauma
Jesus.
Bonding. But, yes. Like, the opposite of trauma.
No, touching God.
We were touching God together.
It was insane.
It makes a lot of sense. And here's the thing about, like, friendships as adults. And I'm surprised we haven't done an episode on that. We should. But, like, a lot of time you meet someone and you're like, oh, I would so be friends with them. And then you have no reason to follow up. You have no reason to like, maybe you exchange Instagrams. You're like, oh my God, girl, it's so fun hanging out. Blah, blah, blah. And I was like, we're going to fucking hang out, bitch.
Yeah, you have to be so intentional.
Yeah.
It's also a very Los Angeles thing or maybe coastal thing that you're always unsure of intentions.
Mm-hmm.
It is very much like, okay, are you trying to pursue a professional connection here?
Yeah.
What do you want from me? What can I give you?
Yes.
You never know if they are just into you, the person, or what you can provide for them.
Big, and that's LA, baby.
That's LA, baby.
Because people think time is money. Money is time. If I'm going to go out, I don't want to just waste my time.
Right.
And I do feel that energetically. Like, a lot of times I'm like, if I'm going to go hang out with people, I don't want to be sitting there feeling like, oh, God, I wish I was, like, at home.
Of course.
So in a way, that is true about us. That I'm like, the energy was energying.
No, you do want to be elevating in some way, just regardless. But, I mean, it is tough to come away and be like, okay, I think that they are only here for one thing. And in my case, it's often to get press. Like, they, you know, I know. It's always in the back of my mind. It's like, are you with me because you want some
what
sort of
click? What could you possibly provide for, like, a no-namer, though? You know what I mean?
But, to, well, I mean,
I'm sure celebrities were like, hey, girl.
To me, you're a celebrity. My sweet
now
angel.
Now that you know me, aren't you like, oh, this girl? Clearly.
No, you will never. Your shine has never worn off.
Wow,
but
thank you.
The context of these events is always that someone is kind of someone in some way, or they're trying to be someone in some way. And so, like, there is always an element of, like, I can help you get there, even if I can't really.
I feel that. A lot of times when people will, like, float, like, oh, my God, can I come on your podcast? Like, this was back in the day when we had guests, and then we didn't. And now we do again. But it was like, oh, my gosh, I should come on your podcast and talk about this thing. And I'm like, nobody wants to know about your... like,
dude, that is so
take
brazen.
On that thing specifically.
Oh, I cringe deeply. I think that is my biggest hurdle that I'm desperate to overcome is my innate cringe. In 2025, we're doing away with cringe.
Doing away with cringe. How do you feel that you've done so far?
Oh, it's hard.
It's hard.
It's an everyday battle. Because I look at me in the mirror and I go, you
again.
You are one big embarrassment.
No,
I'm like,
I think you're too empathic. Like, you feel embarrassed for people. You feel judgment for people. It's not necessarily you doing it, but you're like, it hurts to watch.
It hurts. It hurts. Even coming today, I'm like, oh God, I'm completely burdening myself on to Kelsey. Like, I feel that.
I've been trying to get you to come hang out with me so many times. We often hang out at our gym together because we're like go-getter bad bitches that like wake up early and do things. But the other fun part about our adult friendship, which maybe this is a tip for people trying to make adult friends, our lovers are kind of like carbon copies of each other.
Yeah, that's
and it's
crazy.
Very easy to like they're downstairs right now watching sports, which feels like so hetero, and I hate that about us. But they're easy to get along together with.
You have to set them up like pets on
like
a play date.
Yes.
And once you have them taken care of and kind of, you know, whisked away, then you're
mamas
free to play.
Can
mamas can work.
Yes. And that's what this feels like.
It is totally like a breath of fresh air. And I also think that a lot of women like struggle to kind of like know what to do with their partner. Like, what do they do? They're at home. They're just like watching TV and they're like, oh, I'm out of the house again. Are you good? I guess there you go.
It's hard to make friend, like combine a friendship like that nature where it's the girl and the partner.
And I think it's actually even sadder and more difficult for men.
Oh, 100%.
Those poor bastards.
I was like, they're either going to meet and just stare slack jawed at each other. Like, what do you think? Or they were going to get along swimmingly, and luckily.
But they're lonely, dude. Like, I just, my boyfriend at the top of 2024 was like, I'm making a conscious effort to make more male friends.
And he did.
But it is tough.
It's an epidemic, I think.
It is. Because
how we end up with.
It is. It's endemic. They.
Whispered that.
1,000% with the incel generation.
Because they have the internet and they're like, that's hanging out time. That's bro energy exchanging.
Well, I did see a very controversial take that, you know, men should not gather in groups bigger than four.
I'm sorry. I'm so fucking sorry. I'm going to need you to. Where's my skirt? What?
It triggered a lot of people. It triggered a lot of people.
Who said this and what was their reasoning?
Oh, it was one of the...
hilarious.
It was one of the, you know, the subway guy with the subway card with the mic.
Yes. Oh, hot takes.
Hot takes. And he had a woman on and she said, my hot take is I really don't think men should congregate in groups larger than four. She said if it's an accidental congregation, absolutely fine. They can stand in line at a Chipotle together.
Stop it.
But if it's intentional... you know, we don't need to be more than four. They don't need to be at a bar more than four or on a golf course more than four. I understand.
I think I co-sign this.
I co-sign it also because I feel like even for women, do we need to be more than four? Kind of.
I think until we've toppled the patriarchy, yes.
Right.
I think the problem is when men get in groups of four, they get too many ideas.
Right.
Too much money, too much crypto, too much power, too much strength.
I mean, look at the oligarchy currently ruling
this
country.
Do you see what I'm fucking saying?
Yes.
Yeah, and you're a New Zealander who, like, wants to be here, which is insane.
Alas.
I mean...
Unfortunately, I've built a life.
Unfortunately, you've built an amazing career, which... Talk to me a little bit about how you got into, like, the space that you're in.
Okay, great question. So
thank you.
You should do what I do, actually.
Yeah, I should host a podcast.
What's really interesting is I went to film school, can you believe? And talk about patriarchy.
Whoa.
Surrounded by men. And I realized that pretty quickly that I was going to be a minority there. And while I was there, I started working in magazines. Mm. And I wrote a pretty viral article at the time in New Zealand. Do you know any of this?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. It's quite funny.
Tell me now.
I was 20 and I was working for the national newspaper.
Okay.
It's called the New Zealand Herald. And I went full Gonzo style, kind of like undercover.
What?
On this group of boys that were throwing parties. God, I'm going to get flayed alive when this comes out.
Tell me.
This group of boys, they called themselves the Full Timers, and they were throwing parties in the city, and they were using kind of women as like objectifying women in their promotion of these parties. So they were promoters, but like all their, you know, Facebook albums, and this is the time when you were taking club photos.
Archives.
Yeah.
We got archives.
So they were being like, women, like, hook up, like, girls, like, hook up for the camera. And it was always, like, very, like, girls, like, flashing tits.
Okay,
like,
we have that in America.
Right.
We do.
So it was that. And what made it kind of, like, particularly salacious was that the Prime Minister's son at the time was one of the members.
Uh-oh!
And so I kind of went along and... yeah, went Gonzo style and interviewed a couple of them, and what they ended up saying to me, and I will fully admit, like, it was totally like unethical the way that I went about it, because I wasn't on, they knew they were on record, but I wasn't noting it down. I didn't right. have a recorder out. So they knew they were talking to me and that I was a journalist, but I could have done, I was just so green and I was only 20. But they were saying things like, you know, we just fuck bitches, get money.
Cool.
Yes.
Sick,
and so it was
bro.
That kind of thing. So I ended up publishing an article about it and it blew up.
Amazing.
And that was my foray. I went on to work at Vice and then moved to New York. Soon after that, I was 21, 22.
Shit.
Yeah.
See, like when we first met and you had talked about working at Vice, I was like, oh my God, in a parallel life, like we kind of reflect each other's.
Yeah.
I just ended up getting into some sort of like influencer-y land.
Yes.
But I try off camera to be, I'm in the doc space, which I've talked a lot about, that like people don't really see that front facing side of me, which the telling a story, not necessarily my own, which I'm happy to do, but the telling of a story, especially one that brings like justice to light, is at my core, I feel, my world's purpose, like why I'm here on this earth.
That is so interesting.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's like what you do as well.
I do feel an innate sense of justice, and I'm trying to reckon with that right now because I have spent so much of my adult life at this point making famous people more famous.
Wow.
And I'm trying to work out what that is and if I'm comfortable with that as my brand
legacy.
And my meaning and my legacy. A big part of obviously what I do, what my podcast is about, is we talk about celebrity profiles, and
which
what,
is so fun.
And I mean, celebrity profiles are amazing because they teach you what it's like, or like they pull back the curtain on what it's like to hang out with someone for 2 days, 2 weeks, whatever. And it's a fascinating insight into what it's like, what these people are like in real life.
And for anybody that doesn't know what we're talking about, like a profile is in the magazine or online now, where it's like the really long story, usually that the reporter's hanging out with a celebrity for multiple days and like writing, usually promoting something.
Right. And it's a big cover story, usually.
Yeah.
And what people kind of don't realize is a lot of what they know about a celebrity comes from these articles.
Yes.
So people know, for example, that John Mayer said some very problematic things about his penis being a white supremacist.
Uh-huh.
They may not know that that came from his Playboy profile.
Yes, but they've heard it.
2010. Exactly. But they've heard it. And there's a lot of stuff like that. So it's fascinating. But that is something that I was so called to do so early on. And I think it was because I really wanted to understand what makes these people tick specifically, but the human element of it.
100%.
Like, it's cultural anthropology. It's like, what is going on behind this?
And how do we as consumers of it like shape our beliefs, opinions, purchasing power based on like these things that we know about this person?
Exactly. And we're always expecting them to be kind of our moral, like North Stars,
100.
Like our moral superiors. And it's kind of like they're always unable to do that. But the one question I get asked the most, other than kind of like who is the most famous person you interviewed, which is
I will
the
ask
most
that.
Frequent, is, and were they nice? Huh. And were they nice?
Because they want to know the tea. We're obsessed with chisme.
Right.
So who are the biggest celebrities and were they nice?
Okay, so big is super subjective.
Yeah.
Because it means something different to everyone. Mm-hmm. I remember the nicest and the biggest, Emma Stone.
Love.
The nicest and the biggest.
Love.
The biggest to me is Brandon Urie and the nicest.
Wow.
Because as a Panic at the Disco super fan. Yes.
That's great that you met your hero and it lived up to the tale. Because I bet you meet 1,000 that you're like, oh, I really had high hopes.
And
truly.
Dramatically let down.
Yes.
Let down. Jhené Aiko, wow. Nicest, greatest, best. I didn't meet her, but I stood, you know, feet away from her in her presence, and I could tell she was very nice. As Lana Del Rey, I got a vibe. I got a distinct energy.
Yeah. I've told you my tea about
you. Have told
about,
me.
Yeah.
You have told me your tea.
Yes. I support everything that woman does. Whatever she wants, I'm here to watch.
Chaotic, yes,
yes, and I love that.
Yeah,
I'm here for it. You've told me you've interviewed like Orlando Bloom.
Nicest.
Yeah, I believe that.
God, you have to remind me of them because they...
You've done so many.
Yeah.
Which I think I forget all the time, but you're like a wealth of knowledge of this like world that is so fascinating to like...
Emma Chamberlain I'm interviewing again this week.
Oh, no way.
And she is very nice, very
nicest,
big.
Very regular.
I'm trying to think of who else is very, very nice. It's like, it's hard. Some are very neutral. You know, I've met people who I thought were lovely. Mm-hmm. And then I've wondered if I was being worked over.
Yes, because you're there to interview them. They know that you're following them around in a non-PR setting, but it is a PR thing.
Can I give you an example?
Yes, please.
Matt Rife.
Yes.
So I interviewed him. I thought he was totally delightful. Mm-hmm. I actually interviewed him maybe a week before the whole controversy exploded.
With the
special needs helmet, the whole nine. Mm-hmm. And I just really thought he was the most down-to-earth, cool guy. And he may be. He has an enormous chip on his shoulder, clearly.
Yeah.
In the comedy world.
Yeah.
But... I just now, in hindsight, don't know if, it was a full
act.
I don't know.
I think what's interesting about him is he's been in the business for so long, and he represents a thing that I think a lot of comics hate, but audiences love, which is just like a hot, funny guy. And so you get a very divided audience on him, and then you pair it with like whatever he actually is like as a person. You know, you have to accept that as well. But he... blew up so fast. It's one of those things of like he was an overnight success that had been working for 20 years.
10 years to be an overnight success.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he is also a product of his generation, which we grew up with different kinds of jokes that were being told. Comedy has changed so much since he's been famous.
Yes.
And like what we as a society has deemed funny, like we're rooting for him and people love to fucking hate him.
Right.
I feel very neutral about him, but I could see how he seems very cool and down to earth and regular.
Whip smart.
Yeah.
Whip
you
smart.
You have to be.
And I wish that he would really sand off the chip because he has everything. He has everything that every comedian could ever want or dream of. And he is obsessed with getting this professional clout, this professional credibility from his peers.
Exactly.
And he's got to let it go.
Which
he's
is crazy.
He's got to let it go because he's so beloved by the audiences.
Yes.
And he has got everything. He's got the arenas.
But that just goes to show that, like, that's my biggest, when someone asks me, like, what's my greatest fear in life, it's that I don't earn the respect of my peers.
Right.
And you could have all the money, all the fame in the world, and if your peers think you're a fucking joke,
right?
I don't know that I would be able to do my job.
Yeah,
like
I hear
be
that.
Devastated. How did we get so? We got so off what I was trying to expose you and get to know you more.
No. It's so right though. It's so right. I mean, I'm just also thinking of nice and big. I think Emma Roberts is nice and big.
Cute.
I ran into her recently.
Oh yeah, did she remember you?
God, I told this on my podcast.
Oh yeah, tell us.
Well, when I met her, when I interviewed her, she knew who I was, which was crazy. She knew my name, and she had actually cut out one of my articles and put it on her wall.
Oh my God, that's like the nicest thing.
Never happened to me before. Couldn't believe it. Shook me to my core. But she when I met her, and I never say anything when I see them in the wild. I never go up to them.
Yeah.
But because we'd had this exchange, I was like, this is the moment. This is, I should say something.
Yeah.
And Chris, my boyfriend, was like, you know what?
Go for it.
The time is right. She hasn't had, she's sitting down at, she's a table away from us at the restaurant. Her food hasn't arrived. You know, you wouldn't be interrupting her either.
No.
Like, if anything, this is the time. And I went over and I said, you know, Emma, and she's famous for that. She's famous for that smile, that glassy eyed kind of
Julia Roberts,
nothing kind of going on. Smile. Yeah. It's so memeable.
Yeah.
And she really hit me with it. And I found myself just kind of over talking.
Oh no.
I went like, hi, you know, Emma, like Beatrice, you know, I interviewed, I did that cover story. It was amazing to meet you. And she went like, hi, you look familiar, and hit me with a smile. And then I went, you were doing Pilates that day. I just kept going.
No.
And I realized that I was in so deep and I had the best of intentions. I wanted to introduce myself to her boyfriend. I didn't want to be the person that just does, you know, completely ignores him, only locks into her. And I just down the rabbit hole.
Damn.
I went and I walked away from that and went, my God, never again.
Never again. That's mortifying. But I think you also had to react based on the energy you were given back. Like, if she literally said she has an article cut out on her wall from you. Like, if she would have been like, oh my God, hi. Like, good to see you.
Totally. But then it makes me wonder, is that her? Is that the face? Is that the memeable expression? Mm. Or is it a workover?
Mm.
It does make you a little
jadedy,
suspicious. Cynical.
Yeah.
Paranoid even.
You know what though? You're such a delight and like you carry such an energy that like also fuck anyone that doesn't have that mirrored back to you. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You shouldn't stop. I just think the right one's gonna be the one that like does it for you.
Totally.
That changes your mind about all of this. It just takes one.
You know what? It was Orlando for me.
Yeah.
Orlando for me. I will tell you one thing about Orlando and I'll let you go.
No,
then I'm walking away.
The people are listening.
One of the toughest things about celebrity journalism nowadays is that clickbait culture has become so rampant and celebrities are so aware of it that they're careful, right? Profiles, interviews 10, 20 years ago.
The cameras out. Yeah.
Were buck wild.
Yes!
The things that they were saying, mama, you would not
believe. Be like, what?
They were out here being like, and I would take you upstairs and I would ravage you, you little slut. They were just going crazy out there. And you were like, this is nuts. You cannot put this in print.
No.
Right. Now they're so careful. But Orlando and I were speaking and he was, and I said, what's it like to be in a relationship with a creative? I said, frankly, like I could not do it. I'm like deeply competitive and it would be really tough for me to kind of move, you know, in sync with someone and be like, okay, you just got your article adapted. It's now becoming into a movie. Fuck.
Yeah.
You know? And he said, you know, it is tough. He was like, you know, with me and Katie, like some days, like, yeah, it's really, really, really difficult.
Wow.
Actually,
we love that honesty.
He used four reallys. He used four reallys. I remember that. He says, really, 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 really difficult. And I remember at the time being like, this is going to get picked up.
Yeah.
This is going to get picked
up. That's a line that people are going to.
Right.
Yeah.
And I felt guilty about it. Mm. I was like, oh, I don't know. Maybe I should take this out because I know it's going to get picked up and I like him so much.
Yeah. You didn't want to do that barrage of.
Yeah. I didn't want him to have to deal with it. I didn't want his publicist to have to deal with it. I liked him. And then but I also knew it would be huge for the magazine. So I kept it in.
Wow.
But, and this is, again, a moral quandary. Uh-huh. I removed a reallie. I took out one of the reallies.
What?
I took out a reallie.
Oh, geez.
You're being like,
that is.
Draw a chalk outline around my body. You are crazy. So I kept it to three reallies. And you will not believe what the Daily Mail did.
What?
They said, Orlando Bloom speaks out about relationship with Katy Perry, calls it really, really, really difficult. In quotation marks, they put it in the headline.
Damn.
And I could not believe to the point
Damn,
that it was
they
in,
fucking exposed you.
But in the fact that it was in the headline, I was like, the fact that I was spot on about this, and imagine if there was an extra really in there, they would have sent it home.
It would have been nail in the coffin.
Nail in the coffin.
Wow. It's such a fascinating thing that you do, because like no one is thinking about that except for the people that have to do it.
And imagine what having to sit at that dinner table and say, when I said really, really, really difficult, I really didn't mean that really, really, really difficult. I meant just like it's
incredibly difficult. And it changes and creates PR, a mess, a divorce, a trauma, like what they have to deal with behind closed doors. Like your job is cuckoo nanners.
And you know the context and you know what he meant. Yeah. And it's like, and you're trying to convey that. But when you do see it in print, it can be interpreted a million different ways. I remember hearing like Erica Jane on The Real Housewives, and she said about, I don't know if anyone's keeping up, but she says in Beverly Hills, she's like, a text is like a line read. Like you can, it's like reading a script. You can interpret it any which way.
Ways.
And it's like could not be truer. I can read a text message from a friend a million different ways.
Truly.
I've seen Chris read a text message full of periods, like full of full stops, like this. Have a great night, when it is clearly have a great night. And I'm like, you have no idea.
Beauty is in the eye of the reader.
Literally.
Man. And like, as the world switches from print journalism to these digital things, like, do you, everything about celebrity culture has shifted in like the digital era or the age or whatever, but like, you're still in this, you're still doing it. I mean, my God, you have a whole podcast based on it. Like, do you see yourself doing this forever?
So it's a great question. I don't see myself doing it in the capacity that like I have done it forever. Mm. I think there are some incredible journalists who kind of cherry pick the profiles that they get to do, and to have a career like that, someone like Anna Peel, someone like Taffy Broster Ackner, there are so many. Oh my God, Jessica Presler. And when I tell you the profiles that these people have done or the articles that they've written, you will know every single
one. Yeah.
You will know everyone because they have made history with them.
And that's like being an actor that doesn't have to audition. Like you just get the jobs you want to do. You talk to the celebrities. They're going to want to talk to you. Like that's the dream.
I mean, Taffy had a very infamous tweet where she said she doesn't get out of bed for less than $4 a word. And that sent everyone into a tizzy in this kind of economic climate with
this
the media.
This is so fun to like see behind the scenes of a world that I like never thought about or have nothing to do with. But it's fascinating.
It's really interesting. But it does create culture.
Yes.
It creates culture.
100%.
When Trump was elected, we went back in time and did a Trump Playboy profile from 1990. And he says in this profile, I would never want to be president. But if I did, run, I'd run as a Republican because they would believe anything. And the writing is totally on the wall. There is so much ammo in that.
He gives it to you.
In that profile alone, that the Democrats pulled that out and read it at the fucking DNC convention, it would be a slam dunk, baby. And it's like, if you just went back.
And now that you say that, I think I've told you this before, that like people, I guess, accuse or blame a BuzzFeed news journalist for McKay Coppins for writing a profile that people say was the reason why Trump decided to win, like, or decided to run.
No, I don't know this. Tell me everything.
Like, he wasn't serious. Apparently from Trump's camp, they ended up saying like after Trump read it, he was like, fuck this guy. I'm going to fucking prove him wrong. Like this article wrong. But
it was something like Donald Trump will never be president.
It was like, what a fucking joke. I went to cover this story and I ended up being like, is this a bit? And then I guess once Trump read it, because maybe he respected BuzzFeed News at the time back then. Like this was back in the day. This was right when BuzzFeed News started.
Right.
And that's what people claim is the reason why he like.
Which
talk about creating culture. How do you think that guy feels?
How do you think that guy feels?
God.
Like I have a question for you about Mr. Don.
Mm-hmm.
Because
we had an episode about him all last week.
May I continue? Yes, may please. I proceed?
Yes, you may. Because approach the bench.
Because we just did a Paris Hilton profile from 2005 and stunning. And they were 20 years ahead at that time, calling that woman a genius. They really got her right.
Truly.
But in that profile, inexplicably, Kelsey, was a Donald Trump quote. Inexplicably, Vanity Fair called up the Don
to ask
ask him a question about Paris Hilton and her sex tape at the time.
Wow.
What do you think about Paris Hilton's sex tape? He said, very hot. He said, so sad for her, but has only made her hotter. And like, he basically said, fuck that guy. He's never going to have a chance with her again. The guy who like put it out. It was actually a very astute quote. I found it like very accurate. I was like, kind of go off. That's true. All of that is true. But it made no sense that it was there. The guy was just so omnipresent in the early 2000s that Vanity Fair could just call him up and be like, hey, what do you think about this pop culture figure?
He's essentially a social like commentary back then.
I mean, he's in Sex and the City every other week.
He genuinely has always, unfortunately, had his finger on the pulse of pop culture, no matter how like far into it or out of it. But like, he has always been an entertainer at his core. Someone was telling me, who was it? My one friend who's a witch, was talking about how there are different kinds of birth charts you can read. And someone was reading Trump's like soul contract is what it's called. Like basically your one duty here on earth. And they were talking about how Trump's soul contract read as whether it was good or bad, he is an agent of chaos. He is meant to just, that is his sole purpose. And from chaos usually comes either like revolution, tyranny, downfall, uprising, whatever. But like, he is the catalyst for chaos. That's his like entire soul contract. And I was like, he's thriving. He's going to get to whatever universal pearly gates. And they're going to be like, oh, pass the flying colors, brother, get in here.
But there's no one else. Like, I can't think of anyone in today's context who has that kind of grip where you could call them up and they would have a take. Like, they would have something to say.
Do you think it's like a shark? Like, thank you, sharks? Like, Mark Cuban? Like, I'm trying to think of, like, who has the political, cultural...
But here's the thing. If GQ is doing a profile on Timothy Chalamet, are we calling up Mark Cuban? Like, what are we doing here? You know? Like, who is that person now? And, like, that is what is so fascinating. And this is not the first time this has happened to us.
Really?
This is one of many where he just pops up in a profile about Julia
Roberts.
I bet
he paid them. I bet he was paying them to be like, call me for quotes.
Maybe.
I bet.
I didn't even think about that.
Tinfoil hat, baby. It's on with this man.
Oh my God. I've got some tinfoil hats for you.
Oh yeah?
They're assembled.
Speaking about tinfoil hats, if we don't fucking take a break and go to our topic, we'll talk for fucking ever, which I love. This is key. Fuck all the shit I had written down for this episode. We're going right into it. But confidants, I brought, like, obviously, as you can see, the best person in the room to talk about all the tea that is going on with two of the hottest celebs right now, which we will get to right after this break. Confidant, do you struggle with like your hormone balance? I know I do. There is so much happening in our environment all the time that is putting me in dysregulation. You know, like stuff in our food, in our skincare, not to mention all the natural chemical changes that are happening in our bodies in general. But now we don't have to suffer through it anymore. Okay. You are not alone. Now we have Hormone Harmony, a formula made only with herbal ingredients that are shown to reduce hormonal symptoms in women of all ages. I am talking about irritability, moodiness, discomfort, uncontrollable cravings, racing thoughts, low moods, poor sleep, feeling tired all the time, occasional bloating and gas, no desire to be in bed next to someone, if you know what I mean. Yeah, Hormone Harmony can help with all of these things. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. And that means using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromise when it comes to quality, and it shows, baby. And for a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the show code Kelsey at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use our code Kelsey for 15% off today.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The reason, Beatrice, my dear B, that you are here is we could not stop gabbing, kikiing offline whenever we'd see each other about the drama that is Justin Baldoni, Blake Lively.
Yeah. This has been obviously weeks. This has been weeks and weeks.
Months.
And weeks.
It feels like years at this point.
It does, yeah.
And I'd like to hear your personal connection to both of these people, but quickly, mine is, and all the confidants know this because we've done many episodes on Gossip Girl and we've talked to like the writers, we've talked to big fans, super fans. I've gone on Gossip Girl podcast. I grew up like one of the biggest Gossip Girl super fans and like thought I was Serena Vanderwoodson. Like I moved to New York City because I wanted that. Like I wore headbands, I wore the peacoats. Like I fully loved this woman so deeply. She could do no wrong. I adored her and Leighton Meester, like, as actresses, as iconic, like, they were my Sex and the City, you know what I mean?
Can I ask you a question then?
Yes, please, anything.
Did you know about the alleged kind of beef backstage?
Between them? Yes, and I couldn't believe it because I had a hard time conflating who they were as characters with who they were as people. Right. I was like, no, Leighton Meester's got to be kind of spicy. And who knew she was like a chill California girl who was just like really good at acting.
Right.
Like in a New York City uppity bitch. Like I could not believe it. But to the other end of the spectrum with Justin Baldoni, I was always a fan of his advocacy work. I thought he... particularly in the restorative justice work, which I made an entire documentary about, we like our dream was to pitch it to his company to have him like lead our project.
No
and
like, way.
Yeah, that was, he was always on my list as like, if I could get this film in front of him, I think we could really like change some laws in like the world because he just to me had gone from the Jane pipeline to like big shot exec. In my mind, he had done a really good job, and I loved him on Jane the Virgin.
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't until he started to grow out his hair into a man bun that I started to be like,
questions.
What is your intention with women? Like,
right.
Why are you so deeply involved? Like, it's like Catholic priest problem.
It's a shame.
So
it's
tell me
shame.
About your...
So
connection.
I have no connection to either of the
you don't
celebrities.
Give a fuck about
to the celebrities involved. My connection is to the publicist named in the lawsuit, Melissa Nathan, who I think every journalist, celebrity journalist, must know in some capacity.
Really,
definitely. Oh,
give
absolutely.
Us some examples of like who, like why we would know her.
Well, you'll know her because she represented Johnny Depp. Throughout the Amber Heard trial. She's a crisis publicist, which means she is the big guns you call in when shit hits the fan.
Yeah.
But in my case, I worked with her during the Drake Pusha T scandal.
Oh, wow.
So Pusha T was in a rap beef with Drake and during the time outed him for having a son.
My God. Yes. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Like, he was the one who did that.
It was 2018 and... Yeah, and he's, you know, he name dropped his son Adonis and the woman he had a baby with, who is a French painter, Sophie. And
hot.
Very.
Yeah.
And Melissa kind of called me personally and was like, I would love to kind of chat to you about Sophie. And yeah. And she, I mean, I remember very clearly I was going to Abu Dhabi on a travel story and she contacted me at my hotel room there in the middle of the night.
Wow.
Like, she's very persistent and
get shit done no matter what that shit may be.
100% and yeah. And what I find interesting here is that talent really don't know oftentimes what a crisis publicist are doing.
No.
They are like the mummy you call in that's like, shh, baby, I'll take care of it,
close your eyes.
And I think what's been so funny about watching this case kind of like play out, or not funny but kind of sad and unsettling and very strange, is like the sexual harassment thing has obviously come to the forefront now and taken center stage, and the smear campaign thing part of it has really taken a back seat because it's like, okay, that's kind of understood at this point.
That's kind of part of the business.
Yeah. And it did go down for sure that that happened, that they set out to really protect Justin by going after Blake, going for the jugular. And now the question at hand is, did or did he not harass Blake Lively on set?
So just quickly to go back to the points in case for some reason you're not caught up. They made a movie together. Things got weird during the press. When the movie was released, fans were calling it out. It's shortly then revealed later that, was it Justin that kind of was the first one to say Blake's a bully?
So fans were calling it out, and then they also noticed that the cast had unfollowed Justin.
Yeah.
Blake had unfollowed Justin, and I think Colleen Hoover at some point unfollowed him as well. And then someone started to call it out.
Yeah, that maybe... So the first, like, I've ping ponged back and forth.
Yeah.
So it was like, Justin came out saying she was a bully. TikTok went and ran with it. All this stuff about Selena, Jesus. Blake came out that she's a bully. Then it took a minute and Blake came out with the schmear campaign.
I love you saying schmear.
I can't help bagel and schmear.
Yeah, no, I don't think there was at no point that Justin said she was a bully. What seemed to happen was there was a just total surge online.
Yeah.
Of
it was like
negative,
public decision.
Yes. Of negative.
Yes.
It's just a negative outpouring.
So then like everyone thought, oh, skewering Justin because Blake exposed that he was running the schmear campaign with PR girly to bring her down. And people were like, we don't like that. But then it came out, Justin's people released, no, there's a reason why we were doing this schmear campaign, because she was controlling. She was trying to take over the movie. She like overstepped all these things that you're not supposed to do, but didn't really provide receipts. But like people at this point were kind of hating on her. So it was an easy thing. And then again, a little bit of silence and then bam,
bam.
Blake comes with a sexual harassment.
Yeah.
It's
also important to mention that she, around the time of the movie, was promoting multiple businesses, including a new haircare line that she'd been developing for 7 years. Yes.
So she comes out with, again, like very specific receipts and incidences, which people are also like, okay, now she has the big guns behind this. Like she's got Ryan Reynolds. She has the whole Hollywood network behind her to be able to provide these incidences. Mm-hmm. And still, I feel that... Now he's counter suing.
Yes.
And he's also suing a publication,
New York Times,
for publishing things.
Yes.
And at this point, like, what the fuck is going on?
Okay.
Who is right? How do we even know what's going on? What's real? Like, what? Calm my nervous system.
Okay, of course.
This is. Please, mommy, I need a PR crisis manager for this.
I'm here. Okay. So when the news hit, which was pre Christmas, and. Celebrities, if you're out there, if you can hear me, if you're listening, you gotta stop doing this over Christmas. Everybody thinks like the news is gonna be low key.
No.
And it's not gonna get picked up over Christmas. But
that
is when it's the opposite.
It's when kids are on TikTok.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. It's when they're logged in.
1000%. So what made this so particularly interesting when Blake went public with it is that it wasn't aggregated by the New York Times. It wasn't just picked up by the New York Times or Vanity Fair or what have you. It was released in conjunction with the New York Times. It was formally published by the New York Times. They had a whole video detailing all her allegations. That is a rollout. That is two people, two teams working together in unison to drop a bombshell, right? So
very coordinated. So, feels like they were behind the scenes with a built out map on the ground. They had little statues representing people with the red lines being connected to different photos on the wall.
Exactly.
It feels like they were up late doing drugs, fucking pushing narratives, making buckets of info ready to like collapse. It was the FBI raid.
And I think that's what made it feel and. We'll just say, you know, devil's advocate that she was made to feel really uncomfortable. She was sexually harassed by this man, the director and her co-star. That's what made it feel a little bit icky originally, just because it was like, okay, are you using this moment for a publicity stunt? Because you could have sued him quietly and then everyone could have stumbled across it and picked it up. But instead, all of this was made public.
But she said, everybody going to see this.
Yes. The PDFs were made downloadable. The texts were made public for everyone to see, the screenshots. And also there were certain things omitted from the text. So emojis that contextualized them. Stuff was missing.
Damn.
Then hits 1st of January. Uh-huh. And Justin Baldoni comes in swinging.
Damn.
His countersuit is a million times bigger than Blake's. Ooh. And he rebuts line by line pretty much everything she's saying. Not only that, but this past week he released a 10-minute clip of something
yes.
that she referenced in her lawsuit. She specifically said that they were together and there was no sound recorded, but they were on set and he nuzzled into her neck and he said that she smelled good. And then she objected and then he said, well, I'm not attracted to you. Sound was recorded. It was all shot. He was in he wasn't in character, you know, speaking wise, but he was in character, you know, on film. And he nuzzled her neck and she goes, you know, I feel like I'm getting spray tan on you. And he was like, it smells good. There was no kind of her freaking out, really. And that was kind of the extent of it.
And there was no, I'm not attracted to you, right?
No.
There was no, I remember that quote specifically. I was waiting for it and I was like, I don't think he said that.
No. So there were a lot of inconsistencies just off the board. Just like,
it did. Can I say where it weirded me out?
Yes.
As someone who's acted before, it weirded me out when he was like nuzzling in her and was like,
yeah,
am I getting cologne on you today?
Because yeah.
I was like,
am I getting beard on you? Yeah.
I was like, is that character? Because why are you saying it like that?
Yeah. He said, like, am I getting beard on you today?
Yeah. Am I getting beard on you today? Meaning like before she's been like, oh, your beard's all over me when we're like doing this intimacy thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember just having a moment where, as an actor, I wouldn't have known how to act.
Right.
I wouldn't have known if I was supposed to be like, oh, are we cutting?
Well, there is a moment when he cuts.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what everyone is pointing to the most is that
snap.
He snaps so fast out of character. It's cut.
Anyway. Yeah.
But during the moment where they're supposed to be in love and she's supposed to be playing coy because he's chasing her, he is talking about his wife and how they love to stare in each other's eyes. And it's clearly he's just a very kind of deep,
romantic feeler
guy.
Yeah.
But, and that may make anyone feel a type of way.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, Jesus.
And what I don't understand is a lot of people were commenting back being like, you can tell Blake is in love with him. Like, mm-hmm. She's got googly eyes. And I was like, I don't think so. I think they were both acting.
Yeah. So the Red Stringers have come up with a theory that I think...
Give it. Because I already know what you're going to say and I love it.
I think it's pretty spot on. Oh. I think they've nailed it.
Bitch. Tell me.
It's two words. It's Ryan Reynolds. It's Ryan Reynolds.
Another man who, in my mind, perfect.
Okay.
Can do no wrong.
Okay. Well...
Hot and funny. Remember?
You're
I want to believe.
You're one of the only women, I think, that feels that way now.
Truly.
So Ryan Reynolds was with Alanis Morissette for many years. Mm-hmm. They were engaged. He left her for Scarlett Johansson in 2007.
Who could forget?
Yeah. On set. Then Scarlett Johansson and Ryan Reynolds were married mm-hmm. soon after. And on the set of The Green Lantern, he met Blake Lively and married her a year after the movie came out. So... this is a track record that obviously he is accustomed to people falling in love,
yeah.
you know, in this work environment,
yeah.
right? The theory that a lot of, you know, TikTok conspiracists, and these are really smart people who've
yeah.
read all of the
oh,
lawsuits,
yeah.
are saying that, look, obviously a friendship, maybe it was attraction, maybe it wasn't, two people fell in like. And
oof.
this kind of, you know, connection developed. They were texting late at night. There's these exchanges where she's like bantering, joking about suppositories. I know that you've seen that.
Yeah. I do remember being like, what?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
Ryan didn't like what he was smelling.
Ryan didn't like what he was smelling. Production assistants have come forward and said that they recall a fight in a trailer. This is alleged, of course, a fight in a trailer between Blake and Ryan. That he, and then he stormed onto set. He confronted Baldoni. This isn't his lawsuit. And basically from then on, after him kind of demanding to see the dailies, he inserted himself. He said,
I'm going to fucking be here and make sure this shit does not happen again.
Yeah. He was rewriting scenes, which And Blake,
unheard of.
Yes.
Yes.
And Blake initially said that it was her. She was behind the rewrites. Yeah. And then she dropped up
one,
on the red carpet,
yep,
and said that he
my husband.
It. Exactly. And so that is kind of what people have put together, is that this man is perhaps controlling
what he had done to so many men by stealing their wives on sets of movies, and was like, not this man bun person gonna take my wife.
Yes. And like,
my wife.
Thanks for bringing up the man bun, because obviously you've seen Deadpool Wolverine and you remember Nice Pool, the character that
people think is now based off.
Not people. Justin Baldoni alleges was based off him. He's wearing a man bun. He's talking about a woman losing weight after she's pregnant.
Oh, this lore goes so much deeper.
Yep.
Than I was ready for.
It's really, really messy. And now, I mean, it's looking like if they go to trial, she's got to have, it's just not looking good for her. I mean, it's looking like she might have to settle, because unless she has some big smoking gun, I'm not sure how they're going to get out of this.
And like, behind the scenes, how many team members do you think are on each side? How much money do you think is being spent for these things? Like, because at one point I was like, is Justin Baldoni that rich? Like, is someone who like hates Ryan Reynolds funding Justin's like fucking things? Because this is not cheap work that's happening.
No. But what's so fascinating about Baldoni is he's clearly got all of the receipts.
Yeah.
And just this week, Blake Lively and Ryan Reynolds tried to implement a gag order on his lawyer. Which was so ironic. Because,
but weren't they saying that he broke a law? The lawyer broke a law by like talking about something, like trying to sway the press.
No,
that's just their attempt.
It's just their attempt because he put out the clip and he keeps uploading screenshots. Shit. But what did they do when they first dropped the lawsuit?
What?
They uploaded all the screenshots. And they made it public and they released it with the New York Times.
And they don't want them doing the same thing.
They just are taking a play out of their own playbook.
How do you think this is going to affect all three of their careers?
Their careers? Well, so Justin was obviously dropped by WME. And I said this in kind of my own podcast, but it's like one of them has to concede. And what is the more devastating title? If Justin concedes, he becomes a sexual harasser.
And he's never directing. He's never, his production company gets dissolved. He's never working again.
If Blake concedes,
she's a liar. Which I feel like
she can come back from.
She can come back from because she has the power. She's a woman, which I feel like women already get called that shit.
Yeah.
The society is way harsher on a woman in scandals like this.
Yeah.
She's got the power. You know, if her and Ryan stay together, she, I think, can come back from being called a liar. And I don't think she would ever publicly say that. I think she would stand on her own two feet and she'll still get hired and she'll still buy projects and she'll still, I think that's the best outcome.
I mean, Colin Hoover deleting her Instagram, Brandon, the other co-star, deleting his statement supporting Blake.
They all did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fuck that. You got so much tea on it.
They're all switching sides. It's really, really, really nuts. And it's, I just don't. Ugh. We're talking about like it ends with us. Like it's looking like it ends with court. It's really insane. It's really, really insane. I just think she got in way too deep. I feel deeply sorry for her.
Because you know Ryan was the one being like, we will put every dollar behind.
I think he wanted to take him down. I think he was jealous. I think he probably wanted to take him down. And I think she just kind of got caught up in it. I don't know. It's just,
it's not good for anybody at this point.
No, no. And the best thing that she could do, and what was, I think, is so ironic, is if she really wanted to have done this, I think an incredible profile, her jumping on the cover of Vanity Fair and giving like a deep soul searching interview where she discussed her experience on set and how she wasn't totally comfortable or whatever, that would have hit so hard.
Yeah.
So much harder than a lawsuit.
Yeah.
And I think she could have buried him just with that alone.
Damn.
But this is just, it's just too much.
So as consumers, right? Like, because I've never seen something this diabolical taken from like viewers. Like I've never seen so much commentary. Mm-hmm. Like I don't really know about, like, since Johnny Depp Amber Heard, where like there's a lot of people having opinions and like, what is there like a right and wrong way to like go about how you feel about this?
I mean, so what's so devastating about it is, and I've seen a couple of these takes and I'm trying to steer clear of them. And I hope like the confidants can steer clear of it too. There's this discourse that women lose with this, because obviously 99% of the time women are telling the truth about sexual harassment or SA. And, you know, if Blake is proven to be exaggerating, then fuck. Women are
losing.
Fucked.
Yeah.
I am choosing to reject that. Mm-hmm. I'm rejecting that. I think that women, especially powerful women, but women overall, we're all multidimensional. Mm-hmm. We contain multitudes. Mm-hmm. We can lie, we can scheme, we can be manipulative, we can be good, we can be amazing, we can be generalist, we can stand up for each other, but we can also be totally individualist. Mm-hmm. And to group us together and be like, we all lie or we all tell the truth about sexual assault or harassment or whatever, is so reductive. And we shouldn't be looking at it as a collectivist issue. And I think that's what's so tough, because men, the patriarchy, wants to reduce us to that, wants to reduce us to this like tiny little thing, because it's so easy, right? It's so convenient to like act like we're just like out
drama.
Here being like, yeah, being like, oh,
shit
fuck.
Starters.
He touched me, you know? But it's absolute bullshit. Like, I just, like, we can let it play out how it plays out and let it have no kind of effect on
being like a woman hater
being
from
a woman.
This.
Yes. Yes.
I feel like that's like the best energy to remind the confidants and end on, because I love how you brought it back to like the core of the issue, which is like, remember this movie was about like SA and DV, and like, remember how this
toxic
whole thing has like
toxic relationships
past. Yes. Like has fucked up the whole messaging. And like, that's why you're here, is to bring it back to us. So Beatrice, like, you have to come back.
I love you.
Because this was unbelievable. It's so good. And I need more discourse around your thoughts on this culture. And like, the next time something juicy happens, you're going to be the first person to call. Where can people find you, and where can they find more of your work? And like, if they like this kind of context and your takes, which I love, where can they find you?
Oh my God. You can follow me at Beatrice Hazelhurst, but go listen to Uncover Girl. Find us on Instagram at Uncover Girl Podcast. You won't regret it.
No,
it's
you
fucking
won't.
Good stuff.
Yeah. If you like this, imagine the research and the deep dives they do on this shit. Oh, man. And I've been to one of your salons at the W. It is fun.
Oh, love you.
It is really fun to dissect it, like what it means about the overarching human race and blah, blah, blah.
Listen, it's gossip for smart people. Pop culture. Yes. Pop culture is cultural anthropology.
Oh, we all took a course here today.
Yeah.
Taught by Professor Hazelhurst. Thank you for your service.
Love you guys.
Confidants, we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.